Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where you are just in time to help me explore a topic that we began to look into on Monday. It has to do with the American middle class. And we're asking a question of how many of you who are members of the middle class are comfortable with your middle class status. And this is what I don't mean by that. I don't mean, are you, you know, kind of arrogantly looking down on people who are not members of the middle class? That wouldn't be a wise thing to do. Remember, there were some people who were members of the middle class before the Great Recession. And as a result of the Great Recession, during the Great Recession, they were moved into low-income status. No, through no fault of their own. They had been working hard the years leading up to the Great Recession. They had been working hard. They had been working diligently. They had been working faithfully. The months leading up to or just before the Great Recession, they were doing what they had been doing all the time. They had been paying their bills to the best of their ability. They were trying to keep food on the table. And because of the situation that had been arranged, the Great Recession hit, and some people who were middle class became lower income, members of the lower income category in our country. So I'm not asking you, are you, you know, feeling kind of superior to people who are members of the lower income category? No. When I ask you if you are comfortable with your middle income status, I'm asking, do you feel fairly confident that you will always be a member of the middle class, or if anything changes, you'll move from middle class to upper income? Do you have that comfort? My guess is some of you do. And my guess is some of you don't. You know what happened? In fact, some of you may personally know someone who had that turning of the tables occur in their lives, where they were once on one level, economically, financially, and they'd been there for a while. And the next thing you know, something went wrong. The Great Recession hit them, turned things topsy-turvy for them. And it's not all about the Great Recession, because people are still struggling now. And fortunately, President Obama and the Democrats took the steps that a lot of economists and other financial experts were saying needed to be taken to prevent that Great Recession from turning into another Great Depression. And they provided the stimulus which helped stave off the Great Depression. Well, we still have some tough times, and we're continuing to take a look at what's happening with the American middle class, according to research done by Pew. And as I mentioned Monday, they were taking a look at incomes, and they were saying, they pointed out that the nation's aggregate household income has substantially shifted from middle income to upper income households, driven by the growing size of the upper income tier and more rapid gains in income at the top. Fully 49% of U.S. aggregate income, 49%, went to upper income households in 2014, and that's up from 29% in 1970. In 1970, 29% of the U.S.'s aggregate income went to upper income households. That was in 1970. In 2014, 49% of the U.S. aggregate income went to upper income households. Let me share now what I've shared before. I think it's great that we have families and even individuals who are doing well enough economically, financially, that they are members of the upper income category. I think it's great that we have truly wealthy people around the world and across our nation. The only problem comes in where the system is set up in such a way as to ensure that as our nation's companies become wealthier and well, these people are making more and more and more money. And as a result, the nation's overall wealth just keeps increasing dramatically. It's just unfortunate that the system is set up in such a way that the vast majority of that increased wealth goes to a very, very small percentage of the country's population, while everyone else who is not a member of that small percentage suffers and struggles and struggles and suffers. It's not just about doing well financially as a nation. It is about doing well as a nation financially and making sure that everyone is treated fairly. Middle-income Americans have fallen further behind financially in the new century. In 2014, the median income of these households was 4% less than in 2000. In 2014, the median income of middle-income Americans was 4% less than it was in 2000. And not only that, but because of the housing market crisis and the Great Recession of 2007-2009, the median wealth of middle-income Americans, median wealth being assets minus debts, what you own minus what you owe. The median wealth, what you own minus what you owe, your assets minus your debts. And hopefully you come out owning more than you owe. That median wealth fell by 28% between the years 2001 and 2013. In the meantime, the far edges of the income spectrum have shown the most growth. In 2015, 20% of American adults were in the lowest income tier, up from 16% in 1971. On the opposite side, 9% are in the highest income tier, more than double the 4% share in 1971. By the way, before you get too upset, super hot, super heated about the income of the lowest income tier going up, let me just let you know now, we're going to talk about how that happened a little bit later, and you'll see that it's not because money was shifted from the middle income tier to people in the lower income tier. That's not what happened. We've already shared with you that the shifting, according to Pew's research, and they're usually pretty good at what they do, according to their research, the shift, the financial shift has occurred only up. In other words, some of what the middle income, people in the middle income tier has or had, has been shifted up to the upper income. It hasn't gone to the lower income and to upper. They said the shift occurred by having it move from middle income up to the upper income. So again, in 2015, 20% of American adults were in the lowest income tier, and that's up from 16% in 1971. So notice that that number went too now. In 1971, and that's not a good increase, that's what I'm pointing out. In 1971, 16% of American adults were in the lowest income tier. In 2015, 20% of American adults were in the lowest income tier. In Pew's study, which examines the changing size, the demographic composition, and the economic fortunes of the American middle class, middle-income Americans are defined as adults whose annual household income is two-thirds to double the national median, which is about $42,000 to $126,000 annually in 2014 dollars for a household of three. Under this definition, the middle class made up 50% of the U.S. adult population in 2015, down from 61% in 1971. So, the number of people in the middle class went down in 2015, by 2015, while the number of people in the lower income class went up. So at the same time that we have the situations bringing about fewer people in the middle income tier, that same system has brought about more people in the lower income tier. So are you in the American middle class? The state of the American middle class is really at the heart of the economic platforms of our presidential candidates as we head into the 2016 election. Policymakers are engaged in debates about the needs to raise the floor on wages and on how best to curb rising income inequality. Our president, President Barack Obama, has used the term middle-class economics to describe his economic agenda. I want to ask you, there's no question that people are beginning to realize that what President Obama has been saying for years is absolutely true, that the middle class is being squeezed. Now, he's been telling us what's causing the squeeze. He's been sharing solutions. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of people who have complained about feeling the squeeze, who have complained about being distressed because of the squeeze, but have strongly opposed President Obama's fixes for these problems. They did not want the jobs bills that he has proposed, including rebuilding and repairing our roads and the rest of our infrastructure in this nation so that we could get at least, at the very least, three benefits at one time. We'd have safer, better road systems. We would have individuals and families benefiting from having good paying jobs that would bring more income into their households, and as a result of the increased pay that these people would be receiving all across the country, the nation's economy would be stronger. At least those three benefits would be a direct result of proposals that President Obama made had people not decided, well, no, we don't want to cooperate with him, so we're going to say no. And I mean not just our politicians either. We the people. Many amongst we the people who are feeling the squeeze said, nope, we don't want to cooperate with him. So many things. Let's build this railway. The national highway system has made travel in America so much better than it was before there was a highway system, a national highway system. People made good money, and the nation's economy was strengthened as a result of the building of that national highway system. The president proposed that we do the same thing with a national railway system. That there are a lot of people who did not want those benefits, and they said, nope, we're not going to cooperate with you. Again, are we holding accountable the right people when we get angry about our financial situation? And when I say hold accountable the right people, I mean even when we, who decided we're going to support the people who are opposed, who oppose taking the steps that will lead to a much stronger economy. Are we being reasonable? I definitely want us to look into this whole issue of whether or not we're being reasonable when it comes to who we really become angry at when we feel the financial squeeze. A lot of people like to blame the poor, and they like to blame immigrants, including those who are in America legally, because of the financial pinch that they are feeling. Is it reasonable to be angry at low-wage earners, including legal immigrants, even illegal immigrants, when we focus just on what's happening with regards to jobs? Now, I'm not asking the political or legal or philosophical question of should people be here, be allowed to stay in America as immigrants if they have not come legally. That's not what I want us to focus on right now. I just want us to focus on the financial piece of this right now. Because for a lot of people, that's what the argument is. They're taking our jobs, and they're angry at immigrants for taking our jobs. Is it reasonable to be angry at these low-wage earners, though, when they are working jobs that many who are angry at them won't even apply for? I mean, think about it. The real reason that centuries ago Africans were brought over to America to work the cotton fields and do a lot of the other backbreaking work that was done in order to make this nation, help this nation, built this nation into the prosperous nation that it became, is because, as history tells us, the work was so hard that Native Americans who were initially employed to do that work, forced to do that work, could not do it. It was so physically backbreaking, so labor intensive, they literally could not do the work. It was so hard that white people refused to do it. And so instead they chose to enslave the black race and make them do the work. And while the black people were doing the work, the racists in America, not all white Americans, only the racists, were telling the lie that the black people were lazy and would not work. While they were doing the work, while they were making America rich, or helping to make America rich, it was being told that they were lazy and would not work. And to say that they're taking our jobs when a lot of these low-wage earners, including immigrants, are working jobs that a lot of us will not apply for is disingenuous. I'll be right back.